everyone.
This is Alex. And this is Zach. We want to make one thing very clear to any listeners of this show. Black lives matter.
All black lives matter. We stand with you. We stand with the protesters.
We love you. We care about you. Stay safe out there and enjoy the show.
Rotten cabbages? What kind of slum do you think this is?
So what'd you do this weekend, babe?
What'd I do this weekend? I played some video games with some friends of mine.
Oh, you did you? What game did you play?
I played, well, first we played some Among Us, which I assume several of our listeners will have heard of before.
I have not heard of it until you played it this weekend.
That's the thing, is this game has been out for like years, but it feels like it really caught fire like just a few weeks ago. It's a game very much like Werewolf or Mafia, if you've ever had one of those like hidden role games in like a party situation. It's kind of like that, but you're little dudes and you're running around on a ship. It actually kind of when we loaded in the first time, my friend Talia said, move over, Fall Guys.
I thought the same thing because I was the weird bean cylindrical shaped characters are very popular these days.
They're very bean-like. I wouldn't be surprised if
Mighty Beans.
I wouldn't be surprised if Fall Guys releases like special Among Us skins on their characters. But yeah, you're like a little avatar and you're running around a spaceship like draining the oxygen tanks and like fueling up the warp drive.
So mundane, everyday, right. Bureaucratic
tasks
that Leslie Knope would find absolutely just out of this world.
That need to be complete. You know, cross
absolutely offs. Absolutely invigorating.
Right. Cross offs on a to-do list of sorts. And it's dang fun. It's fun to complete the task, but the hook, obviously, with Werewolf and Mafia is a one person or two, depending on how many people you're playing with.
Isn't it up to three?
It can be up to three, but
oh, I don't want to know how many people have to play for there to be three of these people.
It goes up to 10. So I would imagine at 10 players, three imposters would kind of work, but I would still only do two, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
But the imposter can kill the other players, and they can like disappear into vents, and they can sabotage aspects of the ship to try to, you know, cordon people off and get them alone. Because anytime somebody discovers a body, they can call a meeting, or they can call an emergency meeting by hitting a button in the cafeteria. When you call a meeting, that's when everybody actually gets to talk. Usually if you're on Discord or if you're on some voice chat, that's when you get to talk about what's going on. Like, oh, I saw Orange leave, and then the sabotage happened right after they left, and then I saw them come back from where I found the body. So I think it's Orange. But maybe that person is the imposter and they're just lying out their ass. Like, it's a big bluffing game. It's a lot of fun. There's something to do. There's another path to victory. If you complete all of your tasks, it doesn't matter if the imposter is caught. You get to win the game. Everybody that dies becomes a ghost, which is cute. The ghosts can float around and they can still complete their tasks as ghosts.
Oh, that would be my goal as of the game as soon as possible.
Just to get off so you can be left alone to do your tasks.
Yes, because if people don't know, when I play games, I'm the opposite. I don't do MMOs or any type of player games that require me to interact with other players. The most exciting I get in terms of multiplayer games is Mario Party or Mario Kart.
Mm.
So when the idea of playing a game with other people and having to pretend and convince them that I'm not a mass murderer, great. Yeah, no, that is a recipe for a panic attack.
I have this habit of sounding really scummy even when I'm not the imposter. It's weird. They're like, hey, what were you up to? And I'm like, oh, me? I was off by myself in the corner of the ship refueling the fuel tanks. I promise. I promise. I was.
You would notice from me, because the octave of my voice, or like my voice would go up a whole octave, like, where were you, Alex? And I'd be like, I was with you the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Nah. Like, it's like Leslie, no.
I just did a whole bunch of helium.
It's like Alex game one. Oh, me, I was at the oxygen tanks. Alex game two. Oh, I was with Paul and Bob, and we were in engineering together. Alex game three. Oh, me, you know, just walking around doing stuff, whatever.
Actually, that might be my ploy. I would just pretend and act super awkward and suspicious so people think I'm the imposter every single time.
And then they throw you out the airlock.
Yeah. And so then I just come back as a ghost and I can complete all the tasks without being bothered. And then that one time I finally am the imposter when I am acting like that, it's almost Anna de Armas, the character that plays Marta in Knives Out. I very much empathize with her in this moment because, yes, I would be just like she can't tell a lie, and every time she does, she gets physically ill. I can't tell a lie.
It's like, oh, I was in admin swiping my car. Yeah, just, you know, swiping my car.
And we got to play some Whisper Ghost Horse.
Oh, are
Ghost it, Whisper Horse?
Is it time for Whisper of the Ghost Horse?
I mean, I think so. Why not?
There's nothing more noble and free than the heart of a horse.
Which horse do you want?
Easy there.
He suits you.
And he needs a name. Kage. Born from the darkness.
So, I've been playing quite a bit of Call of the Whisper Heart Horse Ghost, and I have been running all over Tsushima. I completed five. I completed five duels.
Ooh!
That granted me some sick armor.
Did you follow the Ten Duel Commandments?
I did not. I trampled all over those things. Fuck the Ten Duel Commandments, okay?
But who's...
Duel Commandment...
Who's your number two?
Number one.
Oh, who's your number one?
Duel Commandment number one, win. Duel Commandment number two, don't fucking lose. Those are my two Duel Commandments.
Rule number three.
It's the two Duel Commandments! There's only two!
Well, I mean, hey, it's really easy to remember.
What have you been doing in Whisper Horse, babe?
In Whisper Horse, I finally tracked down the last Tsushima banner I needed. Last is a misleading word. I didn't get the last one. I still have a lot to collect, but I needed one more to get a new saddle, and it's bright gold, and I'm living for it.
It's
and,
a fly saddle.
I finally completed the first act. The second portion of the map opens up. I straight up tried to fulfill my lifelong game quest of becoming, I mean, my horse is named Kage Shadow. I want to be all black, and I want to be the ninja samurai that I was destined to be.
Yeah, fuck those samurai traditions. We don't need none of those.
The Ronin armor is the armor actually that I have really enjoyed and come to play in. Like, if you get a boost of melee damage, you can come out of like tall grass without enemies noticing you, and your snack is really great. So yeah, it's really, I think, the most balanced for my play style, because I creep around in the shadows and from above, or just however I can. I am always pressing that R2 to squeeze through duck, dive, and dodge, and you can figure out the rest. But yeah, so I've thoroughly was trying to get to the north to find the black dye merchant, and I just beelined it, and I forgot everything. The world just fell away. Kage and I finally went for
that big peaceful
that
run.
Really nice peaceful riot. I wish it was peaceful. There was fire and smoke all over. It was very much the title image of our podcast. Like, you know, you just see Jin like sitting on the back of his horse, and he's like, "This is fine.
This is fine."
But I finally find the black dye merchant, and I probably could have looked this up online or before I went. But little did I know, there is no black upgrade for the Ronin armor. So that was great. That was great. I got a new bow skin out of it, But then I was like, you know what? I'm reclaiming this narrative. White is actually the traditional color of death in many East Asian cultures. So I'm just going to go find the white dye merchant. He did have some dope new Ronin armor. So yeah, I'm decked out all in white. And
heck yeah.
You know what? I'm not trying to give away spoilers, but when I did find another white horse at a random Mongol camp, I take back, and if I haven't said this yet, in my opinion, anyone who chose the white horse and named him Sora, they're totally the weeb type that would also have picked Team Instinct in Pokemon Go.
Yeah, those loser instincts. The only reason we like them is because they're not us. Valor for life. I don't give a shit about Pokemon teams anymore. That's it's 2020.
We were both Team Valor. And
that's
hey,
right.
If that was happened, wait Pokemon a minute. Go went down in 2016, like 2 years before we even met. So
babe,
I've
been lying to you all this time. I'm Team Mystic. I'm sorry.
I mean, Team Mystic's so cool.
No, it's a relationship breaker. I'm sorry. I'll get out of here. I'm gonna start packing up my stuff, and I'll be gone by tomorrow.
I mean, I'm saying you can stay.
We're both Team Valor. I was just doing a bit, but she didn't do the bit.
Get out of here. Yeah, go on.
That's what I was
no
looking
one
for.
Needs you anymore. Can't you see we don't need you anymore? But I mean, no, really, I need you your help paying rent.
Yep.
And you know,
keeping
and keeping
and,
this yeah. house you know, operating, so please stay. I also love you and stuff.
Oh, well, that's nice. I love you too. It's oh my god.
So babe, what's that time?
It's time to open the show.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Alex.
And this is
My Cabbages,
an Avatar podcast.
Oh, my cabbages.
Yeah, that thing we're supposed to do at the beginning of the show actually happened like 10 minutes or however long into the show. I don't know until I edit these things. Do you want to talk about this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Heck yeah. This episode is the penultimate episode that leads up to the two-part season finale. Yay, season finale. We're almost out of the woods. I can't believe we're almost done book one. We're almost done book one. I can't believe it. It's been a crazy ride. It's been so much fun doing this podcast and getting to know all hundreds of you.
And I've enjoyed every second getting the fans and also spending this time with you, babe.
I can't believe that people listen to us ramble about a show we love. But we're glad you're here and we're glad you're along for the ride. And
absolutely. The more the merrier.
I wanted to say before we get into the episode, jumping back really quick to Among Us, I would love to arrange some kind of thing where if you want to like if we want to like play Among Us together, maybe if there's enough interest on Twitter at CabbageCast, maybe we can arrange something like that. We can have a night where we play Among Us with some fans. This episode is
Book One, Water, Chapter 18, The Waterbending Master.
So we start with you know, some more like always, some scenic shots, establishing shots, this time of icebergs and ice stuff on an ocean backdrop. Appa is sailing along and suddenly gets bombarded with these like giant ice spikes that kind of start shooting out of the water. It's really strange and stark, but like they hit Appa, they get stuck to him, he has to break off. And then in this action scene, like Appa eventually takes a spill into the water, and then boom, we see an ice trail shoot out and Appa's frozen solid in the water. He's stuck. He can't move. And we realize that in 18 episodes, the Fire Nation has failed to do what the Water Tribe has done in literally 15 seconds.
Well, hey, it's because Appa is so good at snucking and hiding behind bushes.
It's true. Yes. I mean, I don't know how they even saw him
in the air. Stealth. Oh, well, I mean, they did see him in the air multiple times, actually, because they were really good at finding Aang and his, and they were really good at finding the gang, Because they were kidnapped in pretty much every episode up until, I think, the 14th episode. The exception of one.
Appa's sneak is like a +8, and Aang's sneak is like a -6 because of his Instagram following.
Mm-hmm. The gang is on the back of Appa, and we can tell that they're getting closer. We open, actually, this scene with the cutest... This is probably the cutest opener we have gotten all season.
Yes.
Because we meet my new favorite animal. Actually, this is better than when we meet the duck chickens, the Tuckin, the realtor Duckins. They were the chickens and the ducks.
That's the name of their prestige rap gang. It's the realtor Duckins.
It's a koalater. It's a koalater. It's a koala and an otter.
A koalater and
a koala
an otter walla, if you will.
I think that's really cute too. An otter walla.
It's an otter and a koala. It's a koala head on an otter body, and yes, that's just as cute as you fucking think it is. So go look at it and love it.
It just wants everyone to be happy and just smile and cuddle and to also give it clams because it really likes clams.
The koala otter is a pacifist. He just wants everybody to be friends, but if you don't like him, I will come to your house and I will fucking kill you.
He has a sign that says, make clam chowder, not war.
new Water Tribe clam chowder.
I'm sure it's delicious.
Which is your favorite, New Water Tribe clam chowder or Flame Hatton man chowder? Or clam chowder? Because there's only one option here.
I mean, I'm going to like the Water Tribe clam chowder.
Yeah, the New Water Tribe clam chowder.
Yeah.
There's no contest. They use creamy broth that just tastes better.
It is totally creamy.
There's no way to eat Flame Hatton man chowder. It's terrible.
I don't hate on the broth base because in my book, there's always room in my heart. Actually, as much as I love tea, if I had to make myself a virtuoso of one food group, it would be soup. Picking up just a standard carton of stock from the grocery store is treason. Like,
make your own stock.
Your own stock, folks. And the easiest thing you can do, just take a gallon-sized bag. Here we go. We got free cooking tips, and this is something you can do during the pandemic. You just take a gallon-sized bag, you put that in your freezer, and any veggie scraps that you would normally throw out. Well, I'm talking like potato and carrot skins and
onion skins.
Yeah, like outside, like all the outside peelings of onions or garlic,
the leftover leaves from your celery,
Yeah, all of the seeds and tops from peppers, whatever. You throw it in there in that bag. The only thing you want to leave out are any cruciferous vegetables. So no, like, Brussels sprouts or broccoli or cabbage. Unfortunately, as much as I love cabbage, cabbage is just... cabbage can only go in the water by itself. It doesn't play well. It's like the betta fish, of vegetables. It has to be on its own. The cabbage man, he's
a little bitter.
He's a little bitter.
He's a little bitter after Aang smashed his cart 4 times. And that bitterness, you can taste it in his cabbages.
Yeah.
When the cabbage merchant is bitter, the cabbages will be bitter.
This place is worse than Omashu!
Speaking of tea, we're coming at you early Monday morning right now. We're having ourselves a breakfast get up and record while you all are having a breakfast get up and listen to the podcast, as I assume many of you listen in the morning. That's when I listen to my podcast. But in fact, we're not having tea this morning. We're having coffee. It's time for Coffee Corner.
Why don't you enjoy a cup of calming jasmine tea?
More tea, please.
I don't need any calming tea.
So it's Coffee Corner. I am not a connoisseur of coffee. I just really like it a lot, and I make it
every day.
I have a grinder. I grind up my own beans. I recommend if you want to try to take that next step in coffee.
By grinder, he does not mean the
one used for drugs.
No. Or I was going to say the hookup app that every gay man have had on his phone in the mid like, and maybe now, I don't know.
Grindr's still a thing.
Yeah, I think, like, Grindr's still a thing.
Gay it's, people can hook up just fine on gay people can hook up just fine on Tinder, but Grindr is still like an app, as far as I know.
Before there was Tinder, there was Grindr, because course
I put all
because
my
of course all of the gay men had this online dating thing figured out before the general population.
I grind my own coffee beans. When you grind your coffee beans and you take that lid off, just that smell, smells good. It almost doesn't matter what coffee beans they are. I know people are gonna wave their pitchforks at me. I'm not that kind of a snob. I like freshly ground coffee. Beyond that, I'm not a stickler for it's. Yeah, I'm a simple taste man. I like to take that extra effort. It's also a ritual that helps me, like, center myself in the morning. You know, getting up and making coffee is just part of what helps wake me up. The smells, everything about it. So we're drinking some pretty baseline, like, grocery store brand whole bean coffee, but I've ground it and added some cinnamon and a little sprinkle of salt, just the way my baby girl likes it. It cuts the bitterness just a little bit. Makes it really good with half and half. I recommend it. I have a Chemex, but I've also used a French press. They both work great. But you know what also works great for this coffee, and most people have a regular drip coffee machine. Makes great coffee.
Normal $10, $5 coffee maker at this point.
Regular coffee maker makes great coffee. I just like to swirl it at the top because, you know, I'm a pedant when it comes to coffee. It's great. I love it. It helps wake us up. Coffee in the morning. This has been Coffee Corner. Great. Let's move on.
The best part of waking up
is cabbage in your cup.
The gang are on the back of Appa. We're like, hey, we're getting close. Look, there's a cute little quarter. And we don't see those down south. We have here you guys have quarters, but down the south we have penguin seals. Yeah, you wouldn't have seen those around here because you know we only have penguins down south. Yeah. And gosh darn it actually checks out. Yep. In real IRL
math checks out on that one.
I totally meant that on purpose. Yeah,
everyone knows that according to Aang, there is no South Pole. The South Pole is just an ice wall that surrounds the flat earth that the scientists won't let us near.
Yeah, that's why he's actually been taking them to all of these disparate points on the map.
He's because... trying to disprove curvature. Sokka's like, can't Appa go any faster? And Aang's like,
why don't we all get on your back and you can fly us to the North Pole?
Sokka's like, all right, everybody, climb on. And then he just like gets on the edge and starts like twerking away. And I don't know what it is with Netflix and buying properties where underage kids twerk, but can we, like, Netflix? Come on, man.
That has not gone over very well for Netflix.
So Sokka adds a second strike to Netflix's
the hashtag cancel Netflix.
Yeah,
I mean, they're gonna say that it was Brian and Mike leaving the live action that got it canceled, but
it really... turns out it was Sokka's twerking. We ruined it for all of us. So yeah, the Appa gets captured, and we learn that the Northern Water Tribe is full of badasses that can bend circles around folks. They show up on some steel boats, and Alex was wondering where did these steel boats come from? If they don't have like smelting forges, how do they make these boats?
I mean, I'm assuming they're steel. They may be iron. I don't know, but they also how they are so buoyant.
How many?
I don't know. They look very heavy. I think that they're able to have the ability to cut through ice, which is that's important. Uh-huh. But we're gonna see later in the episode that they obviously don't have any to build their houses because everything's made out of ice and stuff.
Can you imagine if they, like, the Water Tribe of the North are just very stubborn and they want to smelt metal, but they need to get like 20 waterbenders so that they can keep their ice cauldron ice while it's heating up molten lava on the inside. They just don't understand how forges work, and they're like, make the forge out of ice. But sir, that won't... Shut up. Everything's ice. We're making it out of ice. These boats sort of give way to this awesome giant ice wall that is clearly, like, manipulated and controlled by waterbenders. They have like this cool like water elevator thing where they melt like bands of solid ice into this reservoir that raises it up to the level, which is very cool.
We also get a cutaway scene to Zhao and his cabinet, which we learn actually when you're a captain, and you know, also questionable again getting promoted.
I think he might be an admiral.
Oh, he is admiral now. He's admiral Zhao. Yeah, because it went from captain mm-hmm. in episode like 4.
Yeah, he got his Harry Potter letter and got upgraded to admiral. We learned that all of his he refers to one of them as, I believe, Commander Lee. And we know from Zuko's naming convention that now they're all Commander Lee. All of them, his entire like crew of leaders are all Commander Lee.
And I know
we've got intern Brian's and Commander Lee's.
We need to come up. Oh my gosh, babe, we need to come up. That's going to be a video where you need to come up with. We need to come up with the Avatar tier list for the different Fire Nation administrators. They're on the back of Appa going through the canals of the city, very much like a Venice vibe mm-hmm. with all of these water bridges going over and all of the small boats going got, like, in between.
Water tribe style gondolas.
Oh, water tribe gondolas. I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. And as they're going by, and Aang and Katara are just awestruck by the architecture and all of the things they're saying, they're like, yeah, we're going to be able to find a waterbending master, no problem.
It looks like this society shits out waterbending masters. It's going to be easy.
And of course, it takes Sokka 3.5 seconds to
ogle.
See, of course, we all know Yue is beautiful, and this is the first look of who we finally get to be, who becomes a significant character in a very small span of time. Mm-hmm. But it's no spoilers. But Yue is this beautiful girl going down on a water tribe gondola.
You could even say she's mysterious as the dark side of the moon. Her hair is decidedly not penis shaped. That's notable. I don't know why that's notable. Hey, by the way, I got this brochure for this vacation place called Lake Laogai.
I mean, I was thinking this the other day after we recorded the last episode with the inventor being a roadie and being a stagehand. Yeah, he actually, there was the one summer when he was the stagehand for the Ember Island Players.
Yeah, there you go. I love that. They find him backstage in that episode.
Anywho,
it's like, check it out, I'm working for the Fire Nation again, but this time I'm doing something less harmful.
Like, oh, and then Sokka, of course, has his moment like Brock does every single time.
There's a cute lady.
In Pokemon, Misty, Brosh,
or
Misty, Brock, and Ash show up too. That's their couple name.
That's the power couple. Ash. That's the power couple name is Brosh.
Brosh.
Hey, don't forget to eat your broccoli. That's what the fans call it when they want to consume Brock and Ash fan art.
Every time they show up to a new town and they run into Nurse Joy or Officer Jenny.
And Brock's like, wow, she's so beautiful. And Ash and Misty are like, she's the same one as the last time, dude. They're clones. They're clones.
I mean,
they're all clones.
Suki later on, I'm like going like, ooh, like, trust me, because Suki always knows.
I kept expecting Suki to show up and fight Yue. Just, let's go, bitch. Come on.
I am a warrior, but I'm a girl, too.
Everybody by hopefully that follows on Twitter knows where my allegiances lie. And
Zuka for life.
Zuka team. Yeah. Hashtag Zuka for life.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to pick a female interest for him, it would be Suki over Yue all day.
Yeah, of course. Suki has the added benefit of after 3 episodes not becoming the moon.
I mean,
spoilers.
Dark side of the moon. Or I think she was the OG Sailor Moon.
Oh my god. Fuck. UA Sailor Moon, everyone. That's fucking hilarious.
See that crossover now.
Princess UA.
You can submit your fan art to mycabbagecast at gmail.com.
Please. I don't want to have to draw it, but she'll make me draw it if no one else does. Yeah, it's music night, everyone. Remember fucking music night from before? From before? He mentions it twice as like a throwaway joke, but like I mentioned at the time that it was cool to see that continuity come back. But here we are at a music night. We get to actually see it in person, which is just fucking dang.
There's tons of continuity throughout this season.
We don't see the Sungihorn, which we address later, honestly.
For the last time, I'm not playing the Sungihorn.
That was my first question. It's like, it's music night.
Yeah, where's the
Sungihorn? But we don't have the Sungihorn. Oh, wait. Just you wait.
I assume the camera angle is just poor and that sitting around the fire somewhere is Olmec. And he's like, hey everyone, it's me, Olmec. I sure love music night. I'm glad you bought me for this purpose.
You know what? Like,
let's do some obstacle courses. Now we're having music night. Stop it.
And we get this really, I mean, yeah, they're missing the Sungihorn. They're missing the, they have strings. They have some percussion. Iroh's leading the vocals. It's Iroh and the Bryans.
Yeah. Iroh seems to be reciting a song that somebody wrote for Rebecca Black. Because it's very basic.
See, I mean, I think a lot of this is his attempt at trying to, maybe go with a haiku, in acoustic. It's the acoustic version of their best hit. But really, Iroh was trying to figure out, he was having trouble with inspiration. And so the lyrics for the song, winter, spring, summer, and fall, four seasons, four loves. And, so it turns out he didn't stay in at a Holiday Inn Express light last night, but he did stay at a Four Seasons and write this song.
I hate to break it to you, babe, but four seasons, four loves.
Winter, spring, summer,
winter,
fall.
Spring, summer, and fall. Four seasons, four loves. Is a haiku. Four seasons, four loves is five syllables, and the second that other verse is seven. So when arranged, you can make a haiku out of it. So that's actually a very fun observation.
There you go. Actually, I knew that the entire time.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, because we, after playing Whisper Horse for so long, we have become experts at writing haikus.
Yeah, we're really good at arranging words written by others into meaningful haikus.
That's actually one of my favorite aspects of the game.
I love haikus. I love every aspect of Tsushima that makes you sit and relax. It's just a very nice little
thing. Like the hot springs when Jin is getting out and of his clothes and you can see his butt.
You can see his cute booty. Anyway.
Intern Brian, they're dancing. Like, they're having a great time at music night.
So he hears someone coming and he's like, finally, the Sungihorn guy showed up. And he turns around and it's not the Sungihorn guy. It's Zhao. It's Zhao and the Lees. And they're not happy to see Iroh and the Bryans. It's they're about to throw down. It's about to be
ballroom lessons are over.
Music night is over. Fucking rap battle night is about to start.
We transition from music night after Commander Zhao crashes music night. We actually do a nice transition from one song to another, and the Water Tribe, we have this really sweet drum line going on, and they're bringing out all the stops for like the pep rally.
Yeah, Aang, unlike last time, Aang is like, now these people
have spirit.
the spirit's strong here.
This actually has very strong vibes to me of like the city in Breath of the Wild, where with the Goron people.
The fish people?
The fish people.
I forget what they're called. Yeah, we have a giant like steaming crab in the middle in like this cauldron. It looks delicious.
That's like, yeah, someone, I mean, and being from Maryland, babe, you know a good crab.
You pop a popsicle off of that claw and you're going to eat that for a week. As someone who is from Baltimore and knows that like six people can down like basically an entire bushel of crabs, it's funny that like there are like 50 plus people here at this gathering and they're all just like, here's the one crab. We got one crab. That's going to be enough, right? One crab. And they're like, I don't know if it's going to be enough. And then they see the crab and they're like, oh, we need to invite more people.
And then we get this awesome festival where, like, the water tribe leader, he's like, oh, and we have these our two guests from the southern water tribe, Katara and her brother Sokka, and then we have the Avatar, and life's great.
And then we have our two very special guests, Appa and Momo. They bring out like a big toss salad for Appa, and he just like devours it.
He growls at the other people trying to get at that. Whoa! He's like, no. And it's a giant seaweed salad, like a wakame salad. Delicious.
Appa would bite one of these dudes' legs off just by accident and then spit it out and go, gross. Sorry about that, dude. He just really wanted a salad. Oh, God.
I do wish that we got a little better high-res food here, but whatevs. It's a festival, and it's enough for me to guess and maybe get some good inspirations to do some food dumps.
I get the distinct feeling that in the live-action Netflix version, all the animals are just going to be regular animals. Let's place bets on all the ways this show might suck, and then we'll watch it, and we'll play bingo with all of our predictions. The Water Tribe leader like gets up to say some stuff about the gang.
Yeah, and then he's like, and now our Master Paku and his students will perform, and we get our first look at synchronized waterbending, and holy smoke, these guys were definitely on the Olympic. Like, they're on the gold dream team.
Yeah. Do you think maybe, like, it's kind of like diving, where when they're done with the water, they have to put it back in the body of water without making a single splash?
Oh, absolutely.
Just, all right, now that they've swished the water around themselves in synchronized motion for the last 10 minutes, they're going to enter the water with the water, and boop. It's a perfect finish.
Ever since they changed the scoring system, like where they can no longer get a perfect 10, it's never been quite the same. But even before they changed it, the Russian judge never always was the lowest scoring. They were the most stingy.
Yeah.
Never gave a perfect 10.
9.2. Brutal. Yeah, the party fades down a little bit and they start to serve the food, and Sokka is striking out hard. Or he's it's hard to tell if he's striking out or not, but he's certainly putting his foot in his mouth.
So, you're a princess.
We cut to Brock here. Brock here asking out Nurse Jenny / Officer Joy, Nurse Joy, Officer Jenny, and saying, "Hey, you want to go and do an activity later?
Do you think Sokka's a werewolf?"
"What makes you think that, babe?"
He's always wanting to meet Yue at night. She's the moon. I mean,
he did howl at her.
It's true.
Pretty much when he was oogling her down the, when they were passing each other on the Appa / the gondola.
I'm just putting that out there. Maybe Sokka has some ulterior motives to courting the moon.
Mm.
If he has a direct line to the moon, maybe he can text and be like, "Sup, babe.
He does.
I need to raid a village. Do you think you can be full for me tonight?"
He has connection to the spirit world, so things are a little supernatural.
I think Sokka's a werewolf. Sokka werewolf confirmed.
So we know Sokka would have been just like me, Team Jacob. Great.
And he's really putting his foot in his mouth. But here, newsflash, folks, if the person you're trying to court, like, thinks you're cute already and likes you, then, like, I don't know. I think
she thinks I'm cute!
Harmlessly putting your foot in your mouth can be kind of endearing. It can show a little nervousness. It can show a little bit of vulnerability. But Sokka's trying to, like, toot his own horn, and he doesn't know how to play instruments.
"You know, back in my tribe, I'm kind of like a prince myself."
Ooh. It's not the Sungi horn.
Sokka goes to toot his own horn, and it's more like,
"I'm new around with these parts. Parts, yeah, I know all about parts. Like, this city, yeah, we're going places.
Look back at me. Now look at you. Now look at me. Do you see a crown? No? Well, it's because I couldn't afford one. But I'm basically a prince." And Katara's like, "Yeah, prince of what? Being a loser?" And Sokka's like, "Shut up!" We need to drop in a random battle music here for a second, because Katara uses Antagonize, and it's super effective. Sokka's defenses fell.
So we get a transition, and the poetic justice, or the ultimate clap back,
the second
the best
shoe drops.
Continuity of the show to date is when we get Zuko, his first appearance in this episode, pouting in bed, and the door to his quarters opens, and Iroh's coming in. He's like, I'm not playing the Soongi horn.
He's like, I already told you, Pops, I'm not playing the Soongi horn. And that scene, it harkens into this idea that, like, there's a lot of scenes that we don't see that happen between Iroh and Zuko, and their relationship is so strong and so well-defined that we can almost imagine how those scenes went, you know? Mm-hmm. We can picture all the moments where, like, he's standing solemnly next to Zuko, and he's like, you know, we need a Soongi horn player on Thursday. And he's like, told you. Yeah.
Can't you see? You know, on Thursdays, I meditate.
I have personal avatar brooding days on Thursdays. It's like, that's every day for
Thursdays,
you.
I brood.
You brood every day. Yes, it's important to my schedule, old man. Iroh comes in. He's like, actually, our plans for tomorrow, it's going to be some problems. And then in walks Zhao.
Now Zhao.
That's welcome to the hit sitcom Now Zhao.
Down Zhao.
It's just a picture of the Fire Lord from behind waving his finger as Zhao is like looking down. Now Zhao.
It's the Dr. Seuss crossover nobody asked for.
Yeah. Horrible.
Nobody knew they needed.
God damn, that's fucking good. Now Zhao does sound like a Dr. Seuss book.
How now Zhao.
So Zhao comes in and sits through the normal 5 minutes making hidden rhyme schemes with his name. And
some of those are soft rhymes, but I'll give it a pass.
He's like, listen, I got a bunch of Commander Lees and they're great and all, but
I'm a general.
Yeah, he's not the choice I would have gone with.
So, yeah, he comes in. He's like, I'm taking your crew. And Zuko's like,
attack!
Retreat! Zuko's like, what do you mean, man? You got a bunch of Commander Lees. Why do you think I'd take my intern Bryans? I've been cultivating these intern Bryans. Intern Bryans are in short supply these days. And he's like, yeah, I know. I know that intern Bryans work harder because of the blood, sweat, and tears they put into things and their thirsty millennial hope for a job one day. I need them more than I need my Commander Lees. They're going to do a better job. And I don't want you screw me over in my plans tomorrow. So I'm taking your crew and there's nothing you can do about it. Kick and scream.
I'm sorry. We have to do this now. Like, back in that scene and we are introduced to Commander Lee and Admiral Zhao and Commander Lee. And Admiral Zhao is, like, attack and Commander Lee is all retreat.
What are you doing, Lee? Get back on your feet!
But there's so many of them!
No, there's only one, actually.
There's only one avatar. There's only one.
Well, I know it's confusing because he has, like, there's lots of them and he can have access to all of them in, like, the past. It sounds like he might have DID.
He was being metaphorical.
And he has to bet, has to learn all four of the elements, even though he's done it hundreds of times. It's confusing. I know.
He's like, there's only one of them. He's like, I know. I meant spiritually. There's so many of them. So yeah, Zhao's like, I'm taking your crew. There's nothing you can do about it. And Zuko's like, hey, and then Iroh holds him back. He's like, come on. Let's not resort to that in here. I don't want to be making no more insults about tea. I already dropped the bomb last time. Thanks for your jasmine tea. Also, suck it.
So once Zhao informs the crew, or once Zhao informs Zuko that he's coming to conscript his crew.
Yeah, and he's like, I invite you along, but I can't have you cramping my style. You know, like, you're just not cool. You're not with it, you know? Like, I'm with it, and you're just not with it. You dig?
This is worse. Like, this is almost like them coming to steal the Black Pearl back from Jack Sparrow, and Urza was like, wait, you're taking everyone? And I was like, yep, even the cook. And Zuko's not having any of this.
Yeah, Iroh seems way more concerned about the cook than Zuko, admittedly. Zuko could probably just exist off of, like, rice and hatred. And then Zhao notices on the wall a pair of swords.
Shing! Sparkle, sparkle.
Yeah, he sees these swords. He goes over to him and he flashes back to all of the shit. And
his,
we get
before we all, then, his eyes twitch with just like this little like his twitch or his eyes twitch with a twinge of what.
You could almost,
I don't know what drugs he's on.
You could almost imagine like the Benny Hill music playing as his flashback goes back, all the hijinks and the shenanigans that Blue Spirit got into. Blue Spirit's like swapping his salt and pepper, and he's, you know, he's
helter skelter. He's coming in and moving around all the furniture on his ship.
He's putting saran wrap over the toilets. He's just causing all kinds of mayhem and making a fool of Zhao. And Zhao's like,
I didn't know you were skilled with broadswords, Prince Zuko.
You ever heard of the Blue Spirit? And
they're like, oh, those antiques, don't know where they're like.
This week on Avatar's Antique Roadshow.
We're back. Vicky, I'm so happy that we didn't get canceled last week.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Brad.
That's fine. That's great. I don't know if my name was my name Brad.
No, but I don't know if my name was Vicky.
I don't either. We're new hosts. Last hosts got sacked. We have this new delightful collection, this pair of opposing handed broadswords.
They're matching the hilt on these.
Speaking of antiques, Vicky, these are a one of a kind. These items are
handcrafted from the Fire Nation, the best steel.
And Zhao would recognize humiliation from these blades anywhere, Vicky. So Zhao recognizes these swords and he's like, you ever hear about the Blue Spirit, Iroh? Just like out and just kind of plops his dick on the table and just is like out with it. And Iroh is like, so Zhao recognizes these swords and he's like, you ever hear about the Blue Spirit, Iroh? Just like out and just kind of plops his dick on the table and just is like out with it. And Iroh is like, no man, I don't even think he exists.
Iroh sounds like Rick exist. Now
yeah, I'm Rick Now, Morty, I mean Zuko. Oh gee Iroh, what, I need to capture the Avatar, restore my like honor, or oh gee, oh. It's my terrible. There you go. There's my terrible Rick and Morty impression for the folks in the back. I did it. It's happened. So okay. He's like, all right. If you want to join me, Iroh, you know, you can come too. But like, you're not gonna get fed if you stay here because Zuko can't cook. So yeah.
So they show up first thing in the morning, bright eyed and bushy tailed.
Katara is beaming. She's like, oh my god, what a rare opportunity. I'm nerding out.
The pinnacle Hermione Granger moment, the first day of classes of the new year at Hogwarts.
She's like,
I've waited for this day my whole life.
Katara is just ready to go, and Aang is like, all right, let's do this. And then we immediately, Master Paku.
No, please, march right in. I'm not concentrating or anything.
This is me in the morning. When as much as I...
Paku hasn't had his coffee yet, folks.
I have not. I am not a morning person, y'all. Zach, God bless him, he will bring me coffee in the morning because
She comes down and she like assumes a fetal position on the couch, and then I bring her over a coffee and I rub her back and she becomes a person. That's how mornings usually work out.
Either that or I'm in bed under for three layers of blankets and grumbling and just like has to pat around and be like, where is she?
And then I usually sick the dog on her, and the dog jumps up on the bed and like starts licking her face and stuff.
And of course I can't be mad at my fur baby.
So he turns around and then he's like, oh, you didn't tell me your friend had cooties. He like just shits all over Katara. He's just like, oh, you didn't tell me. And then
your friend is a Stacy.
Your friend is a girl, a femoid.
A femoid.
And he like he does the sacred waterbending move, make chair, and sits down like in defiance. He's like, oh no, well I'm not gonna train some woman folk, some girl. Master Paku, a bit of an incel, this guy.
I mean, and we hide behind this you know, veneer of customs and beliefs and tradition. It's all bullshit.
Here's the thing, guys.
Fight the patriarchy. Stand up. Fight back.
Here's what it is, folks. You're entitled to your own beliefs. Those beliefs should not impact how other people want to live their lives. And if they can live their lives in a way that doesn't impact how you want to live yours, you shouldn't give a fuck about how they live their life. So yeah, Paku is a huge fucking misogynist and he sucks and he can hide behind his customs and his culture. But at the end of the day,
that's basically like saying like, I'm not a racist, but I can't help it. Like, black on black crime. Yeah. Like, go fuck yourself, yeah. Paku.
So Aang is like, well, fuck you. If you're not going to train her, then I won't learn from you. And he like starts to storm off and he's like, well, fine. Good luck teaching yourself waterbending. Which, honestly, Paku, listen. Take your fucking frosty ass down a notch, okay? You are not special. I'm sure there's a lot of fucking water tribe masters in the North Pole that are almost as good as you are. That would be fine training Aang in the basics of waterbending. He's not...
I mean, he has, a squad, but he has a bunch of groupies.
Like, this is the country with... considerably hundreds of thousands, if not millions of water tribe people, there's bound to be someone else that can train Aang who's not a fucking bigot. But, you know, for convenience sake, I guess, for the sake of the plot, Katara's like, no, you can't stick up for me in this way. It's very sweet of you to do that, but you have to train from him and we gotta suck it up because you have a larger destiny and all that. And that's admirable. But
because like Aang's like, hold my beer, and Katara's like, yeah. Well, first of all, you're 12, so no, we can't drink.
Let me pour that out for you, Aang. What the fuck were you thinking? That's how that scene plays out. Aang starts water whipping with.
Sorry, wrong way.
I almost, in that moment, I could almost hear the shore as the waterbenders trained. For their waterbending.
I know.
It's almost like Alex was playing a round of Civilization on her Switch. First of all, before we even start the scene, I want to point out that in this scene, we have a little instrumental medley reprise of Iroh's delightful song that he was singing on Music Night, Winter, Spring, Summer, and Fall. So we get to see some more of Sokka's great experience with women, because you know when he was advising Aang earlier at the fortune teller place, he seemed like he knew all of his shit, but now he's all stumbling over himself and can't get a single word straight. This girl's head may as well be an apple.
Yue is all going on her daily boat ride, I guess. I think this is something that they do at the same time every day. I don't know. And Sokka's trying to keep up and walk along side her, and she's like, uh-huh, yep, okay. Sokka's like, yeah, so,
well, it wasn't as much fun after you left.
Blushes, well, he get a little like anime girl teehee.
She blushes and he blushes, and it's a very cute little moment.
And then so they're like, so you want to finally, and she's like, go do an activity. He's like,
that activity.
And she's like, meet me on that bridge tonight. And he's, yeah, okay, sounds good. And she just keeps on going, and he keeps walking and falls straight into one. He missteps the sidewalk straight into the canal. And I cannot think of how non-specific that is. I'm like, she's just like, that bridge. I don't even know if she points. And it's just like, there's five. And Taka, it would be, if it were me, I'd be like, wait, which bridge? There's like five.
It, you mean, sounds like she's just trying to get rid of it.
And almost. Then tonight, you know, at any hour between 8 and midnight. But tonight, like, I'll be there sometime.
Like, if there was some really, like, insistent dude walking next to your boat and he wouldn't leave you alone, and you were like, yeah, sure, whatever, we'll have a date, yeah, meet me on that bridge at like 13 o'clock, okay, bye.
We have a big reveal here, folks. The Pirates of the Caribbean are back.
Yeah, we Captain Barbossa, the man or the pirate with the dragon tattoo. They're all here. They're back, baby.
Listen,
they're back, baby.
Pirates back. All right.
One of them, we learn, seems to really very much like the taste of gold. I don't know if he eats gold for breakfast. Maybe he eats like golden grams, but they're actually gold.
That's some tasty gold.
The pirates, they open up the chest, and it's very much like the briefcase from Pulp Fiction, like glows. I don't know how gold glows, but it always seems to in these cartoons, right?
Shimmery.
It's very shimmery.
So we cut back to Katara and Aang after Yue and Sokka scheduled their very specific activity. And Katara has resigned herself to taking on this healing. And just like every other early experience that I had trying to play D&D growing up, it was, you wouldn't get it. Or, I mean, if you are, you can like play a healer, I guess.
And oh my God, you're right.
Any type of game that we would play, whether it was D&D or some type of like tactical game.
The neckbeard like, trends continue.
Yeah. We could write a thesis on why Paku and the Water Tribe are really the OC incels.
Katara's like, I wonder what would be more useful, to learn DPS or to learn tank first. And he's like, oh, women are only allowed to be healers in this tribe. He's like being shit about it. So she shows up at this lesson and it's a bunch of kids. But we get this cool, there's this like almost like CPR dummy type thing that she is demonstrating the water healing on. That looks like it's kind of made of like some kind of wood, maybe. It's very interesting looking.
And Katara's like, hi. And are you here for the healing lesson, my dear? And Katara looks around and the other girls sitting around the circle or and the dummy are just that. They're girls. They're probably, you know, ages, I'm going to guess, like six, maybe as young as five, all the way up to like eight.
They're little, little kids.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, okay.
To her credit, she sighs and she kind of grumbles a little, but she takes the lesson on offer and she onboards it. And when you're growing at a skill, even if you have an opportunity to learn something that is maybe a little below, but you find a different perspective on how to do that thing, it can be valuable. She's upset about the circumstances, but she is, you know, she's still grateful for the experience.
And I think this is, Katara gets major props here. And, you know, she understands that she has to literally pick her battles. She is going to fight the patriarchy. She's going to do it within. But for right now, this is not about her. This is about literally saving the world. Mm-hmm. And Aang has to learn no matter what that is. They have to live through this war first.
Yeah, Katara has established that she can make priorities and she can commit herself to those priorities, and that's really important.
Well, as the class ends, the healer comes in and says, oh, well, so who's the fine boy? Who's the lad? Katara's like, huh? Excuse me?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, who's the lucky boy?
First of all, I mean...
Your betrothal necklace. You're getting married, right?
Oh, no, I don't think I'm ready for that yet. My grandmother gave my mother this necklace, and my mother passed it down to me.
And the woman's like, oh, I would recognize it anywhere.
It's like
that's Kana's necklace, and immediately she's, oh, how do you know my grandmother? And that's where we learn that her grandmother, you know, the original,
yeah, me and your grandma,
golden
Katara.
Golden girl.
That's right. She's the shadow golden girl.
She's a bench warmer golden girl. Sorry,
she is. No, she's not something worth getting hyped over. We then cut to Aang, and he's learning from Paku, and Paku says something about, it's like, you're moving that water around all good, but you gotta like, you know, squish it,
you
feel it,
feel it, man.
You gotta like be one with the water, dude. So then Master Paku takes his hentai parfait
slurps it up.
So Zuko's brooding in his bed.
And Iroh, trying to make him feel better. He didn't want to play the Sungi horn at music night. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to play pie show. Mm-mm. He was not hungry. And now the chef's gone. So, I mean, and he was not down for whatever Iroh had to cook for dinner. It's like, but hey, maybe we can go on a walk.
He's like, maybe if we go on a walk, it'll distract you from how hungry we both are.
I promise I will not try and offer you any calming tea.
So Zuko doesn't respond. He's just lethargic.
He's like, I'm staying here.
Or just stay in your room and sit in the dark. Whatever makes you happy.
I think he generally is like, okay. Like he's just trying to
keep the peace.
Yeah.
He says literally whatever will make you happy. He goes off on his walk and we get the pirates. They're back. The pirate gang hoist up some barrels of blasting jelly. Some of that KY blasting jelly. When you want to blast real good.
Yeah.
On a Saturday night after an expensive dinner. The KY blasting jelly is applied by these pirates to great effect.
Why they're being delivered to the ship, we do not know.
Yeah, it's a mystery, but they're like, careful, careful.
Iroh ordered
it's
it.
I think it's just a metaphor. They just want that jelly on hand so that when Zuko shows up, they're just like, yeah, we just wanted this to represent how much our move is about to fuck you big time.
Little did Iroh know his yearly delivery of lube, the dragon of the West, like got delivered, and they're like, he's trying to track that package on Amazon. He's like, you know, they're really close, so I'm gonna go on a walk because they probably can't find it around this riverbend here.
Yeah. I'm gonna make sure it's coming. I need it.
The postal service, you know, may need a little assistance.
I have a date with the fortune teller in 2 days, and daddy gotta be ready to go. So they blow the shit out of this blasting jelly. It turns out blasting jelly is used for blasting, but it's also used for blasting.
Zuko!
It explodes. It goes up in smoke.
I like boom boom jelly better.
Boom boom jelly. There's this really cool explosion. If you want to animate explosions, take a look at this explosion. It's a well done one. It lights up the area around it. It balloons. It's big and bright and orange and cool.
Ooh.
It's a ooh, ah, right.
Ah.
We don't know what's going down. Like, it definitely looks like Zuko could have died right here. I mean, usually there's a little more to it than that if they're going to kill off a main character. But, like, if you're, like, a kid watching this week to week, like, I think at this moment you're not really sure if Zuko's still around. So we reconvene with Sokka, or with Princess Yue, and she actually did mean a bridge. She must have pointed to one because she's on a bridge and it's night and Sokka shows up, so he clearly knew where to meet her. It works out. She wasn't asking him to get lost.
He doesn't get stood up like he has, and you know, I give credit for Sokka because I have a feeling that even though the dating options in the Southern Water Tribe are not probably that great.
He's not used to having this many prospects.
But Tsuki, she ain't gonna be happy.
He shows up and he's like, I made you something. And oh buddy, Sokka. This horrible, like, scarred piece of driftwood that vaguely resembles a quadruped. He's like, it's a fish. See, there's a guy that's got a fin. And she, like, we from the future know that she's, you know, making a very difficult decision. But in the moment, it really does seem like she hates this fish so much. She's like, this was a mistake. Listen, I thought you could, like, carve wood and stuff like that.
I'm not into abstract art, okay? It can't be a person and a fish.
Listen, okay? I never understood Pollock, and she runs off and starts crying.
It turns out, like, she's a creationist. Waterbenders did not evolve from fish, okay? It just did not happen. Didn't happen that way.
It's not real.
The world is only 4,000 years old, and it's flat. Runs away crying.
Yeah, and Sokka's, you know, he's he's pissed. He's rightfully frustrated. He really thought he had a shot with this girl. She blushed, like she reacted to his little flirts, and it was very cute. And all of a sudden, her tone is totally different, and he doesn't understand it. I've been there. I've been there before, and it happens. And
it does.
I understand how Sokka could be very frustrated in that moment. So he tosses the necklace. He tosses the little fish he made. He runs off, and we cut to the after, like, getting ready for bed and whatnot. And Katara's like, so how's warrior training going? And he's all, you know, pouty. She's like, that bad, huh? He's like, no, it's this girl.
I don't get it. One minute she wants to go out with me, and the next she's telling me to get lost.
He's like, how's waterbending training?
And Aang's master poop head won't teach her because she's a girl. And all in one moment, now they're realizing the pinnacle of their culture is rooted in the patriarchal misogyny. So yeah. In that one scene, we all are encapsulated between the arranged marriage and the lack of...
These people suck.
Honestly, like, yeah, there's little value.
Sokka's like, fuck the patriarchy. Why don't you just teach her, Aang? And
why didn't I think of that?
And so then they start, but they get interrupted by Paku, who somehow knew that they were going to do this. And he's like, that's it. You're out. Your ass is grass. Your ass is grass, Aang.
So we get a quick scene here, and, you know, after Iroh realizes how he, you know, thinks he lost Zuko, which I will say I think it was a little sudden, and you could see on his face after the ship explodes on his walk, and he's like, Zuko, like, he's lost everything. But I wish that they had spent a little more time there.
I think this scene is subtly hinting at the fact that Iroh knows that Zuko's not dead.
That's possible. He may be acting. We don't know. But at any rate, we now are obviously know that Zhao is the one that paid these pirates to blow up the ship, and he did it. His motivations were to convince Iroh to get him to be his new general for his assault on the Northern Water Tribe, which he had previously refused. He knew that he was taking the crew, but he personally was going to stay behind with Zuko because there was no way that he was going to leave behind his nephew like that. And it literally took him thinking to the point where he's dying. So him and Zhao are enjoying a maybe not so calming cup of tea right now.
It's a very intense cup of tea.
Very bitter.
Yeah. Some black tea.
And definitely a little oversteeped. And
they're drinking the real tea.
Zhao's, so what happened to Zuko? And he's like, I know who it was.
Pirate. We had a run-in with them a while back. They wanted revenge.
And Zhao, just you see his lip curl over the cup of his tea, and he's convinced Iroh, or he thinks he's convinced Iroh.
That, he's like, Iroh bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, he's so easily duped.
Yeah.
Well, now will you serve as my general? And I was like, I would see no greater honor. And they toast to victory, and it's just kind of...
He's like your nephew's.
Damn.
He's like, your nephew's dead. So yeah, now your schedule's free. Do you want to join my team? And then it's time to face the ice, the water music. The gang is out in front of the council, and they're basically begging the council to make Paku teach Aang. Which again, I don't know why Aang and Katara don't just like go into the city and talk and meet like. Talk around to some folks and find a slightly more forward-thinking trainer. So Katara is just like, all right, I'm fed up with this. I'll apologize. And they're like, okay, as long as you apologize. And Paku's like, I'm waiting, girl. And this is enough to push Katara over the edge. She's like, fuck you, fuck your stupid patriarchy, fuck your stupid bullshit, misogyny, piece of shit, fucking...
No, I'm not gonna apologize to you.
Yeah.
I'll be outside if you're man enough to fight me.
And everybody's like, oh, snap. Everybody's like, you know, crowding around and fight, 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 fight. And Katara strides outside the courthouse.
Even the little kids are fight, 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 fight. The gloves are coming off.
So Katara Paku shows up and walks right past her, and she's like, are you gonna fight me? And he's like,
go back to the healing huts with the other women where you belong.
And Katara ain't having none of that. She fucking water whips the shit out of this guy's head. She water nae-nays this bitch, okay?
Fine. You want to learn to fight so bad? Study closely.
And so they fight. And folks, y'all, this is a really cool fight. There's lots of really clever stuff that goes on in here. There's a lot of innovation that's happening. And in this fight in particular, I'll make an animation note that if you want to study how to do action, the key to remember when you're drawing action is not every frame has to make perfect sense. No. All the frames have to do is look right when played in succession. They can look as janky as they want individually. As long as they work and they convey the movement, they're successful. There are a lot of frames in this little fight that if you pause it and go frame by frame, like the people's proportions and how their arms sway and stuff look kind of wonky. But when you play it all through, it's all very fluid and well done. There's this cool scene where Katara like pulls out this almost like disc track, like one of those, you know, the stacks.
She's going to DJ now too.
Well, I was going to say, you know how way back in the day when you'd burn discs, you'd buy those like big CD stacks of CD towers.
Oh my gosh.
She like makes this CD tower of ice and just starts like shooting these CDs at him. And you could tell that like, this is a move that she has invented like on the fly. Just in a second, she has come up with this thing. And it really goes to show her natural talent with waterbending. It comes to her like it flows like water from her. Hey, water. It's funny. She starts to get this guy a little worried. There's a great shot where one of the things whizzes by his head and he's like concerned. You can see the reflection of his face, which is a really cool decision in my opinion. So the fight is intense.
The fight ends and I remember how it ends. Cool, and yeah, so he is really impressed, and he's like, oh, you are skillful. And she's like, but you still won't teach me, will you? And of course he is still going to be resolute and says, nope, I'm not going to budge. I am
no ma'am. I hate girls, and it's just the way it is. There's no way I can change.
Katara is just screaming like, come back and fight me, bitch. He's walking away thinking he's won, and then just it all comes crumbling down in this one moment when he sees Katara's necklace that fell off in the course of battle. He's like, my necklace. And Katara's like,
no, it's not. It's mine. Give it back.
He's like, well, I made this for Kana 60 years ago, the love of my life. And here it all makes sense.
If anything, he refuses to teach Katara. And if, it's not really a great look that like, it's not like he changes his mind about women waterbending. He just has a soft spot for this girl because she's the progeny of someone he used to fancy. And so I guess now she's the exception to his bullshit misogyny sexism. It's just, it's whatever. She holds her own though, and it's dope. So we get a little scene where it's revealed to us that Iroh does in fact know about Zuko's condition, because Zuko is hiding out as one of these soldiers. He walks up to him and he's like, Zhao doesn't suspect a thing. Like, we got this. And Zuko's like, you didn't have to do this for me, uncle. And he's like, the fuck? Fuck with that. No way. I'm going to let you do this on your own. And you really feel for the relationship they've cultivated over this season. Zuko has been obstinate to all of it, but they love each other. Then we cut back and he's like, oh, I made this for Kana when we were young and in love, and I thought she was going to stay here.
But she didn't love you, did she? It was an arranged marriage. Grand wouldn't let your tribe's stupid customs run her life.
But then we see Yue, we cut to her and she starts crying and immediately runs away. And Sokka looks at her and he's like, go get him, tiger. And just runs after her.
Aang's watched a lot of rom-coms in the past few weeks, and he's just absolutely been waiting for his like go-getter moment. He's been wanting to be that dude for the last couple of weeks, and he finally got his moment. He's like, go get her. And yeah, Sokka runs off.
Sokka runs after Yue. They meet on maybe the same bridge that they did the night before.
It's hard to tell. They all look the same.
And she is you know, go away. He's like, no, well, I just want to say, and you know what? He is really sweet in this moment. Mm-hmm. And just, I just want to tell you, I think you're beautiful. And I understand if you don't like me, and it's okay. And it's probably because, you know, you're a princess and I'm just a lonely peasant. He literally uses the word peasant.
Peasant, yeah.
And she just lays one on him, right? Square. And then he's like,
big old kiss.
No, I'm really confused and I don't blame him. Like, her communication, she's like, I just, you don't understand. And she pulls down her collar, like, and he's like,
whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is a kid's show. She's like, no, it's showing my necklace.
And we see, you know, a necklace similar, but the design is slightly different from Katara's, which really is a nice touch, leading to believe that this is a tradition where these necklaces are hand-carved.
Mm-hmm. And made specifically for the people that are making them.
Right. And I'm just really confused because they have been here for no more than 2 days, and it was just announced at the same festival where they welcomed the Avatar that Princess Yue had just turned 16. It's her birthday coming up, and she's now of, like, betrothal age.
Does that mean a bunch of sleazy suitors immediately just came over to the dad and were like, me, let's start a bidding war?
I'm like, wait, so if she was already betrothed, then why didn't you announce it then? Because in a lot of societies like this, yes, prearranged marriages are very common, but like to the point where this woman's marriage would have been prearranged from her birth, probably.
It's literally like that. It's that Yue and Sokka made arrangements for a date, and then Yue got another date or like later that day on Tinder with someone else, and it went really well. So now she shows up with like Sokka later, and she's like, I'm really sorry, but there's this other thing with this other person, and
it's happened complicated. Really
fast. It happened in the 8-hour interim from the last time we talked. We got a final scene where we get unveiled the armada. They pan up, and there's ships all across the horizon, and they're headed straight for the Northern Water Tribe, which will be our next episode, an excellent two-parter combined in one super-sode.
It's going to be the super spicy deluxe ultra mega coming at you 1 hour episode. And I'm not sure if I think that this aired as a back-to-back hour long.
I believe it did. It's going to be a grand old time. We're super excited about it. In the meantime, let's award some experience points and get out of here.
Uncle, do you realize what this means?
I won't get to finish my game.
Shouldn't there be a board or some pieces or something to jangle?
I won Dungeons and Dragons, and it was advanced.
Evil? Or maybe chaotic neutral?
The Demogorgon!
We're deep shit.
You've been shot by an arrow.
Ow!
Well, there'd be penalties to her experience if she acted out of alignment.
So, babe, who did you think rolled the best Nat 20 and crit fail of the episode?
So crit fails and crit successes are about moments. They're not necessarily about the biggest crescendo and lowest low of the episode. They're not always about like the most epic thing and the least epic thing. So mine are a little bit understated, but I like them.
Okay, go for it.
So my my Nat 20 of the episode is Uncle Iroh and the Bryans for their stirring song Four Seasons, which, you know, like all great pop songs, is repetitive and simple and has very few lyrics. So what's your Nat 20, Dylan?
Yeah, my Nat 20 is totally Katara when they're having this Pokemon battle, and she takes a giant pillar of ice and just starts disc jockeying.
Dope, totally dope. She goes like DJ Hero on fucking on Paku.
She's
master from the north.
She is Raft Punk.
Raft Punk. That's not bad. So I had a perform check as my Nat 20. My fail check. My fail is equally as understated. It's Sokka's craft check. Sokka does not have a very high craft, and he didn't roll too good, unfortunately.
When
he
made this, that was yours. I wasn't gonna make that mine. I think Sokka has a hard enough time during this episode where I was gonna give him a free pass on that one, but
that's my crit fail of the week.
Oh, it's, poor Sokka. He tried though.
Yeah, no, of course. Like, listen, a crit fail isn't through lack of effort. It just happens that he rolled real bad.
I don't think it was in that one though. I think it was not the worst roll.
All right. Well, then, what is the worst roll, babe?
I think the worst role is Zhao's deception check. He thinks where he's like, I got this. Like, or no, his Zhao's sense motive check is a complete failure.
Absolutely.
He is so, his ego is so up high in the clouds. His Dunning-Kruger has completely, literally masked him from the enemy who's also masked. But, he's unable to see through Iroh is clearly weeping, and I also think that speaks because Zhao probably in the Fire Nation, like, they have never had, like, they're not familiar with these emotions. I guarantee you Zhao did not have a healthy relationship with his family or maybe even his father, so he would be, any good person I feel would be easily able to be like, oh, for your nephew, who is like your son, to have just died, like, you're taking this really well. Like, sorry, but thankfully, Zhao is a bonehead, and he was able to get past. But to be fair, also, Iroh rolled really high on this one.
He did good. That's it. That's the episode, folks. We love you very much. We're next time you see us, it might be on our usual 2-week schedule. It might be a single week later. We're not sure. We're doing a big ol' episode. We're combining both episodes of the finale into one big juicy steamy My Cabbage's special. It'll probably be a good bit longer than our usual episodes.
The biggest cabbage roll that you have ever tasted.
That's right. Next time on My Cabbages, the finale of season one. We can't wait to see all of you there. Mm-hmm. And you bring the avatar and we'll provide the cabbages. I'm Zach.
I'm Alex.
This has been My Cabbages, an Avatar podcast. We love y'all. Bye.
Peace and love. Bye.